Going to call our July 19th BCPL meeting to order. The first item is approving the minutes from our July 5th meeting. I move to approve the minutes.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any changes, updates, questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Minutes are approved. Moving on to our loan portfolio for the day, we've got six loans at a little over, is it $6 million? I move to approve the loans.
A second.
Great. It's been moved and seconded. Rich, do you want to talk us through what looks like kind of our pretty much bread and butter loans today?
They are. You know, there are a couple loans that finance development incentives, so that's nice to see. Several loans that are expanding or constructing new town halls. Unfortunately, I'm not in the office today. I'm working remotely, and so I don't have the information on the economic development projects, but I can certainly get that to you if you need.
Yeah, it's funny. Rich, I mean, you must know us pretty well, because that was going to be my question. So, yeah, I was just curious. Besides that, no, I don't have any questions. Josh, do you have any questions?
Nope. Thanks.
Okay.
Anybody visiting our northern office in Lake Tomahawk will actually be able to see the Newbold Town Hall, because it's right on Highway 47 as you head up to our office. So that'll be kind of nice.
Oh. Well, that's good to know. Tom, I will tell you, I did go visit. I can't remember, but it was a new town hall outside of Hudson. And it was, last time it had been renovated was from like 1890. It was a much needed project. So great. Well, all those in favor of approving the loan, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Loans are approved. So moving on to old business, which is a status on the discussion about the trust funds and holdings in gun manufacturers and retailers. So I'm going to, Rich, turn it over to you to maybe share with Josh or Tom our good conversation at our last investment committee meeting.
Oh, sure. One of the things that we talked about was the size of the exposure. Currently, we have about $90,000 invested in through ETFs. We don't have any investments directly in any gun manufacturers or retailers, but we have about $90,000 invested in gun manufacturers through ETFs, which is about one in every 15,000 of common school fund dollars. Visually, if you laid out 155 $1 bills, we would have one penny invested in gun manufacturers. If you include gun retailers, the total that we have in manufacturers and retailers is about $1.1 million, with about 88% of that coming from an investment in Walmart. And from what I remember, is about half of Walmart stores currently retail guns. Josh had a good question at the last meeting regarding corporate behavior. The evidence is pretty clear. There is no evidence that ESG investing that excludes portfolio investments in specific companies or industries based on ESG criteria has any impact on corporate behavior. There's also little evidence that ESG funds affect firm behavior. That's because ESG funds primarily try to achieve their objective through portfolio selection, where changing the behavior of a firm is not the primary goal. What they do is they invest in green companies, which attracts investor flows, boosting manager compensation without the need to change corporate policy. That's not to say that activist investors that acquire portions or positions in certain companies can't influence corporate boards, but activist investing is not really what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Josh's other good question among others. Another good question brought by Josh was in regards to a potential conflict between fiduciary duty and ESG investing. And there was a study published by Stanford Law Review in 2020, and I can certainly get you a copy of this if you're interested, written by professors from Northwestern and Harvard that provided an excellent review of this topic. Their conclusion was that ESG investing is permissible under American trust fiduciary law if two conditions are satisfied. First, the trustee must reasonably conclude that ESG investing will benefit the beneficiary directly by improving risk-adjusted returns. And two, the trustee's exclusive motive for ESG investing is to obtain that direct benefit. Now, they also clarified that this rule may be tempered by considering the purpose of a charitable endowment, using the example of whether a distribution would be permissible under similar circumstances. You know, the example they to divest from fossil fuel companies. And they talk about the duty of prudence. That's an important part of trust law, and ESG factors and firm performance. It is possible that ESG funds can provide a similar risk-adjusted rate of return to passively managed funds, risk-adjusted returns of a portfolio can only be improved if those factors are not already reflected in market prices. You know, an active investment strategy based on ESG factors can only profit if the market consistently misprices them. And most empirical studies find that, you know, on a risk-adjusted basis, you know, employing ESG screens lead to performance about the same or worse than benchmark indices. Now, I took a look at about 20 large ESG funds, and I analyzed these funds, and none of them had solely excluded guns, but include gun manufacturers and retailers in their array of ESG factors that they commonly use as screens or filters. You know, I compared those funds to the funds that we currently own and found that, you know, the management fees are higher. You know, the current average fee on the four ETFs that we own that have exposure to guns is about 5 basis points. And the average fee on the 20 gun-free funds is about 19 basis points. So about 4 times higher. The yields are lower. You know, one of the big issues that I see is that if you start excluding companies that have exposure to ESG factors, you are overweighting high-tech companies. And because a lot of these funds are put together based on the market value of those firms, you are tilting the portfolio quite substantially to big tech. And big tech firms generally don't pay dividends. One of our mandates is to develop a diversified stream of income for our beneficiaries. If we moved, we have about $110 million invested in the four ETFs that have exposure to guns. If we move those to the lowest cost alternative ESG fund, our fees would go up by about $45,000, which isn't a lot. You know, our total fees for ETFs right now is about $360,000. The problem, or the issue as I see it, is that our annual distributions would go down by about $1 million, because the funds that, like I mentioned, the funds that do have ESG screens tend to have lower distributable yields. One alternative that I did explore is a separately managed account. And we are going to have to do a lot of more research on this potential avenue. But if we hired a firm, an asset manager, to manage our funds on a passive basis, we could potentially tilt that fund towards dividends, value, whatever aspects we thought would be most important for our beneficiaries, in a way that would make it easier for us to determine which funds were included or which funds weren't. We'd have a lot more flexibility. but still be able to create a fund that that benefited both the distributable income that we provided beneficiaries and the potential for capital gains. That is another aspect of our allocation. Initial discussions with a firm that does this type of business is that the cost of management would be between 10 and 20 basis points. So our management cost would go up slightly. Our average over all ETFs right now is about 14 basis points. If their pricing came in about 15 basis points, which is mid between the 10 and 20, our fees might go up a little bit, but we'd be able to get a portfolio that really met the criteria that would be beneficial for our beneficiaries. That's a quick review of the work that we've done. I believe that what the investment committee determined was that it may not be the best solution to move the funds from the ones that we currently have invested in it into an ESG mutual fund or ETF because of those factors, but it is definitely worth exploring a separately managed account. And that's really all I have at the moment.
That was a lot, Rich. No, I appreciate it. And I just want to, emphasize a few things. I think the first is that how this originated from the beginning was never about corporate or investor activism. And so I just want to make sure that that is very clear. It's always about what is in the best interest of our beneficiaries, as well as knowing our fiduciary responsibility. In my conversations to date, I did meet with the president and head of kind of government affairs for WMDA, on top of talking to the president of the AFT. And what they really appreciated was this potential opportunity or looking at this separately managed account, as Rich was talking about, because it seemed to really do a few things. For starters, we have done kind of the cookie cutter ETFs, and knowing that our funds are unique and kind of this balance of distribution, but also capital gains, so we can build our principal. And by kind of building and evolving, I think, to more of an index that fits our needs is a win-win. And so I just, Rich, I think, you know, hats off to you for really kind of thinking through strategically what makes sense, I think, to the beneficiaries, that optimizes returns, knowing that we do have kind of these unique goals with our funds that aren't cookie cutter like a lot of other institutional investors. I do think that this is a really good opportunity for us to explore that can be a win-win for the fund.
My job sometimes is to pull everyone back up to the 20,000 foot level. And that's what I was doing as we were looking at this. As Rich had mentioned, BCPL has striven to manage its trust assets in order to provide our beneficiaries with a strong and stable stream of earnings distributions while still growing the fund at a rate equal to or greater than the rate of inflation. If you were going to sum up what we're trying to do here, that would be it. And the investment committee and BCPL have done a good job of diversifying our portfolio in accordance with both our investment authority given to us by the legislature and our investment policy that we developed. Our investment in equities was accomplished using broad market exchange traded funds, which gave us exposure to the wide spectrum of the stock market, but at a low cost. And as we've continued to diversify and invest, we've tried to refine our approach as time goes by. And when Rich raised the issue of a separately managed account, I thought, well, the time may have come for us to consider using a separately managed account of stock shares that may be even better tuned to our dual goals of providing strong distributions and capital gains to grow the funds. The management costs of these separately managed accounts have come down considerably in the last 5 years. And using that separately managed account may allow us to define more precisely what we'd like in that portfolio and what we'd like to avoid. The separately managed account would still be in the same asset class as the equity ETFs. It would merely be more focused. And in order to make a decision here, we need to determine which entities may best provide those services. We need to determine the best way of choosing the provider and determining the cost of such a strategy. Rich and the investment committee are compiling and reviewing that information right now on that. It'll take us a while to get all of it. And we're also compiling information on other public asset managers as our commissioners requested at the last meeting. So once we complete the investigation of all this, we will return to the board with the information and our recommendations.
That all makes sense to me. And first, thanks to everybody for the information. I'll add that I've, and it sounds like we're sort of going a different direction than we had contemplated potentially going before. So the more I've thought about this, the more that I am quite leery of identifying particular types of investments that we don't want to make, because I don't think that there's a, I think there are going to be lots of potential areas where we might be skeptical of investing for one reason or another. And I think that the more that we rule out investments, the more we risk having our returns impacted. And I think the more we make sort of, we really change the way that BCPL operates by having the commissioners play a significant role in determining what types of investments are made. Doug, of course, may have a different view, and I'm certainly open to further discussion on the issue. But I also want to just be upfront about my thinking on that. I do also really think it makes sense to get input from our beneficiaries. And so, Sarah, thank you for doing that. I was wondering if there was a way, and maybe the BCPL staff could give this some thought, to sort of formalize the input that we're getting from the beneficiaries. And I guess one question, Tom, for you is, who sort of from a legal standpoint would be considered the beneficiaries, whether it's WINTA or if it's the students or who it is. But in any event, I do think trying to figure out some way to get formal input from the beneficiaries as to, their goals makes a lot of sense. And I know Sarah, that you've had a lot of those conversations with folks over time. And so thank you for doing that. But those are some initial thoughts from my end.
When we first started putting together the investment policy, we had asked that very question, who are the beneficiaries? And what we tried to do was make sure that we were talking to the different stakeholders. And that meant talking to WIMTA, that meant talking to DPI, that meant talking to even school boards. Because of the fact that as we were putting together our investment policy, all of those entities would be impacted, and we wanted to make sure that we were taking their thoughts into consideration. So I would think that we would do the same thing here.
Yes, and Josh, it's from my perspective, I view that as something that I have tried to work very hard on, is connecting frequently, whether it's with WIMTA and always serving a presence there to conversations with Dr. Underly from DPI. And so to AFT and WEAC, just making sure to maintain that communication about these funds, knowing that, no, they do not control, but their input is incredibly important since our distributions go to benefit them. What we talked about as far as from an investment committee, next steps is continuing to kind of build out, as both Tom and Rich pointed out, what the cost and structure of this separately managed account would look like, and then bringing in our beneficiaries to kind of, again, talk about this, knowing that I have had, you know, the conversations have been good, but we would then, I think, bring them in at that point as well, knowing that this has been exactly what it should be, is an iterative process as we are really trying to figure out what makes the most amount of sense. And I think it does make sense to explore the value of this separately managed account. Josh, any other questions from your end?
No, not at this point. Thanks, sir. And thank you for those continuing discussions with folks. I guess that's the one thing I should add is I think that input is really helpful. And I guess my thought on sort of formalizing input was if the board the BCPL mm-hmm. staff had thoughts about a way to sort of set up a formal process to either solicit input from stakeholders, or maybe it's just conversations with the investment committee, but you know, to have some sort of consistent process that's different from just you know, conversations here and there, or supplemental to it, maybe. It may not be practical, but if there is a practical way to do it, I certainly, you know, value their input, and I know others do too.
I think, Josh, that's what we were thinking about with having them come to the investment committee to kind of meet them where they are, because just very candidly, the last thing I want to do is put more work on them, knowing how they're already stretched incredibly thin, and I'm sure you have had conversations with them as well, knowing they're a lot of their current circumstances when you look at whether it is administrators or public school librarians and their bandwidth. And so that was kind of the next step that we talked about, which meeting them where they are is having them come to our investment committee and we talk about this and kind of get more in the weeds with their elected leadership as we move forward.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to new business, which is, it looks like a easement transaction. Tom, do you want to walk us through what we are looking at on page 9? Of our packet?
I'd be happy to. It's a simple utility easement over a very short stretch of our land. The easement would only encumber less than 1/10 of 1 acre, and therefore we determined that it would a $500 easement fee would be be reasonable and full and fair consideration for that easement. So therefore we are recommending that the board authorize the grant of such an easement in return for payment of the $500. The easement that we attached is a draft of it, but we thought, maybe it'd be a good idea for you to just see what one of these things would look like. So,
Tom, should
Josh,
we...
Josh, did you have a question? Yep.
I was just wondering if, given that, if we should vote to approve this, or if that comes later in the process.
We are asking for you to authorize the staff to go ahead and finalize the easement and execute it.
Then I still move.
I second it. Any other questions? See none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye, Josh.
Aye. Easement is approved. Moving on to routine business. Rich with the Chief Investment Officer's report.
Sarah, I don't have anything today, but I will be providing the quarterly investment summary at the next meeting.
Well, and you did have a lot earlier, Rich, so we appreciate it. Thank you. Tom, your report.
The only thing I'd like to report is I'd like to thank the state treasurer for opening the door for more conversations with the Forest Service. Nick Party has been responsive, and I am hopeful again that our transaction is moving forward, and I promise to keep you updated as more developments come about. But that's it for today.
That's great. Thanks, Sarah, for helping move that forward.
Yeah, of course. And my report is really brief. Again, we've been having good conversations with our beneficiaries. I look forward to kind of continuing to do so. And just a side note, what my office has been doing this month is highlighting some of the infrastructure projects that we've helped finance through the State Trust Fund Loan Program. So we're going to be doing that all month, as we've kind of claimed it, Infrastructure Month. And we've been getting good feedback about, once again, people not knowing all the great work that the BCPL has and is doing. So that is it from my end. Any items for future for our next agenda? All right, I move to adjourn.
I second.
Great. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh. Have a good week, everybody.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Take care.